It's the Seria Awesome Podcast, and we're back for the second show after the restart of the greatest league in the world. That is the Italian League. Of course, the games haven't yet kicked off, but we have so much to talk about when it comes to the Coppa Italia. There were some interesting games, and of course, we do have the final coming up. I'm Mina Rizzucchi, and as ever, I'm joined by the lovely Nikki Bandini, and who can forget about Gab Marcotti. Let's start with you, Gab.
I'm lovely, too. What the hell is this?
You know what? You are lovely, Gab.
Thank
so, you.
You
know,
like,
I'll take that
back. Let's reassess at the end of the show.
Should we find, like, all another adjective, like one for each of us so that we always
That's fine. That's fine. Move on.
Anyway, so not sure about how exciting Juve Milan was, but in general, we know there's a very exciting final coming up between Juve and Napoli. Of course, these two did play each other in 2012, but it was Walter Mazzarri at the time, Antonio Conte. And we know what happened then. Conte and some cup trophies. Not that great. But I wanted to talk to you about this one in the sense that I'm firmly a Gattuso fan. And I think that he did a terrific job. I'm so happy he's reached the final. We know that there's Dries Mertens. We know that Ronaldo missed a penalty. How do you see this one going?
Well, I mean, I think off the top, I mean, we're going to start talking about Juve because I think in some ways that's more interesting. And I mean, we'll talk about Napoli in a minute, but as I see it...
So basically, my question sucked. You're going to just create your own. So go on.
Well, you asked how we see it going, right? And I think, I know, but I mean, I question's fine. We got some time to get into it.
I'm joking. Yeah, go on.
I think Napoli's pretty basic. I mean, they turned in a pretty basic performance. They lie sick way. They conceded a bunch of chances. And, you know, I think Juve is more interesting because there's more permutations there for Juve.
Did you like the DVR?
No, I absolutely hated it, and it worked. I mean, first of all, it wasn't a DDR the way it was built. Maybe I would have liked it more if it was a DDR with Dybala through the middle, but it was Cristiano through the middle. I understand why he did this, because we've kind of established that it doesn't work. I don't know, what did you mean? Cristiano, I thought, had a poor game. But beyond that, he's not built to play center forward in this system.
I don't think he's built to play centre forward in this system. I don't think he is at all. And I think that's this sort of great question about Maurizio Sarri and his versatility, because I think he needs to come up with something different if that's where he views Ronaldo. The system is still looks like it's sort of halfway to trying to be what he wanted to do at Napoli. And look, Ronaldo is not Dries Mertens. He's a better player than Dries Mertens. He has far more in his arsenal than Dries Mertens, but he is not the same stylistically as Dries Mertens. He's not going to give you that. Exactly what Napoli got from Mertens in their semi-final.
Well, not at 35, anyway.
Speed
not at 35. You know, we've seen young Ronaldo play there before.
Are we basically saying that this is the reason why that they were so poor, Juventus? Was that because they started off with Ronaldo? I mean, do you think if Dybala started up front, it would have been like, you know, in that role?
I wanted to go on to something else with Ronaldo quickly, which I just think is an interesting subplot that's going to play out in the next few weeks, which is we talk every season about how Ronaldo starts season slow. This comes up every year. People highlight how he doesn't score goals in August, he doesn't score goals in. Are we going to see that again? Are we going to see that Ronaldo, actually, if you give him a mid-season break, has the same thing, that he takes time to get rolling? That's, to me, a huge, like, subplot that's going to have a massive impact on the title race. Doesn't matter where you put him. If this is actually a thing, if there's something in Ronaldo's dynamic, in his physicality, that requires him to get rolling, are we going to see that again? In terms of what you were just asking, Mina, I mean, this is... There was actually a column in La Repubblica just today asking about this, you know, the idea that Sarri wants to Mertensize Dybala. I mean, first of all, I don't think he's done it yet. You need to commit to it if that's what you want to do and try it. But I don't know. I don't think Dybala is the same type of player that Mertens was. Mertens was a winger. Mertens was very comfortable. The one thing that worked very well for him going into this like that is very comfortable going straight ahead. He's very comfortable being vertical, being direct. Yeah. Again, we saw it in the semi-final. I don't think Dybala, I know he's a similar build to Mertens, I don't think he's anything like that in terms of how he plays.
No, this is my issue with this whole thing. I mean, look, I know that Ronaldo didn't have the best game of his life, yeah? But I actually don't almost find this to be the reason that I'm so upset with the performance and why I'm actually very nervous looking ahead. let's not forget that when Napoli played Juventus recently, was it the end of January or beginning of February? They knew exactly how to cut down the passages of play. They knew exactly how to make life suffer for the front line. And at the time, it was Gonzalo Higuain, Dybala, and Ronaldo. It was going to be this whole three. And the question marks were asked about whether or not this was a luxury to play the three of them because, you know, do they work enough? And they didn't get a shot on goal in the first half. And I still have the same issues that I have with Dybala. I think that he is very talented. It's never been about that. But sometimes I think that he's not that efficient in breaking through and just getting in. And you've got, you know, Ronaldo, who's unfamiliar with the role, and Douglas Costa, who goes in and out of the game, and everyone's always worried he's going to break a muscle or break himself or something going on. And then you've got that midfield with Pjanic, who sucks, you know? I mean, like, as in, we know this guy is talented, apparently, but he never brings it when it matters. He didn't bring it against Napoli in the end of January. He didn't bring it against Milan in the Coppa Italia. And my worry is that you need a guy right now who delivers these balls forward, and you've got these front three that are perfect players and not enough coming from midfield. And I just wonder what's going to happen.
Can I make a provocative suggestion I don't think has been tried? Out of those three players, is there not a case that Douglas Costa is the one who is most like working off the Mertens mould? If you wanted to move someone into the centre just for the speed, would it not be Douglas Costa and let Dybala and Ronaldo, both of whom can be quite comfortable using the flanks, play wider?
I think he played there early in his career a little bit at Shakhtar Donetsk. Mm. I mean, the problem with Douglas Costa at centre forward is that he can't play with his back to goal at all. Mm. And, you know, if you're Juve, at some point you will have stretches of possession. And then it becomes really difficult. I don't know. I just think it was a huge mistake to move Cristiano into, you know, you got the message, Cristiano and 10 other guys, right? And you move Cristiano into a different role. Dybala didn't have a great game at all on the wing. And I'm not saying Dybala is a perfect solution at center forward, but they've had more success with Dybala as a false nine than Cristiano Ronaldo as a real nine. I just wondered whether you need to play the three, or there was that bearded man on the bench playing with his phone throughout the match, which a lot of fans seized upon. Now, here's the thing with Gonzalo Higuain, right? He obviously knows the system. He was in Argentina. He had his issues. Let's bring up the fitness thing because that's what we always do with Higuain. But Mina, do you have any idea? Is he capable of starting this game? So he's definitely out for this game.
He's definitely out for this
game. Okay, then can I chuck this out there? Then what if you don't go with a front three? What if you go back?
I agree.
And you do, that's what you do, right? Put somebody in the hole. Put Ronaldo and Dybala up front. And then you go back to Bernardeschi in the hole.
I'm not sure if it's Bernardeschi because sometimes I just feel like there's a part of him that sort of died under Sarri, right? I don't know what's
going. We can add him to the long list of players who've died under Sarri. But yeah.
It's
not going to be Aaron Ramsey, right? Because
he isn't fit.
Well,
Aaron
Ramsey, he's never fit. Again. But he's starting to train again. There's a possibility that it could be Aaron
Taller
Ramsey.
Taller Smurf. Yeah.
But again, he's not that comfortable playing in that role either. I mean, this is where it comes to light about all the mistakes that we're doing. And my feeling is that I was so excited for this match, and I'd come in and I talked to you guys about this wonderful interview that I had read between Bonucci, obviously, and talking about Sarri, and so many of them were like how intelligent he is. And I got excited again. I almost forgot all the things that annoyed me about Sarri. And then I watched the game against Milan, and I was like, oh my God, it's the same thing over and over again.
All right. I'm going to throw this out there. So what you're saying is, let's just look at the permutations, right? Because you and I agree, Mina, that maybe a front three isn't the thing to go. But then if you play a diamond, you're not crazy about Bernardeschi. Ramsey's on the Ramsey plan again, so he's not available. Is there really anybody else who can play in the hole?
Well, here's an idea. What about if you put Dybala and Douglas Costa up front?
And what do you put Cristiano?
Sorry, Ronaldo and Douglas Costa, Dybala in the hole. And then you have in your three, whatever happens, I don't want Pjanic, I want Bentancur, but I need, because, you know, we know Napoli is very physical and they managed to dominate Pjanic last time. Deme is excellent in that. So I would rather have, especially considering Zielinski and all the others possible, I'd rather have Khedira back, because I feel like he's less soft than what are the options. Rabiot, I mean, I'm not entirely sure why this guy's even on the team. These are the mistakes that continue to be shown up, because Ramsey and Rabiot have added no extra value to this Juventus side. So I would like the old guard back. I don't care if they're turning 45 by the end of this year. I want them back.
Would you drop Pjanic for this game?
Yes, absolutely. Bentancur all the way.
I think Mina would have dropped Pjanic for every game about six months ago. So.
Yes, and I think I'd be right in saying so. Like, I mean, you know, like, as in, I'm so glad that there are rumors connecting him to Barcelona. You know, they love a depreciating asset, so go for it, you know? Meanwhile, you can send us over Arthur.
He's not going to do this because I don't think he's done this. Well, he certainly hasn't done it at Juve, as far as I know, and I don't think he's done this before. But given all the weird foibles in this team, might a 4-4-2 variant work a little better with maybe Matuidi on Cristiano's side so he can work on that? And then you can put Bentancur and whichever Juve midfielder offends you less alongside him, maybe Khedira, as we heard from Mina. And then on the other flank, you can put Douglas Costa or Cuadrado or Bernardeschi or whoever you want. But at least you'd have a little more shape to it. And then you go with Cristiano and Dybala up front. I mean,
It's a very pragmatic solution, and I think Gabbett's really intelligent. But, I mean, we know Sarri. We know how stubborn he is about trying to play a specific style of play, which is let's continue to go through the middle even if they continue to murder us. So I don't think we're going to see that. I mean, you have Ronaldo for a number of years, and you have a coach who's insistent on a style of play. I think he'll get there in the end. I just don't have that much time to wait for it. So I don't think there's going to be a 4-4-2. I think we're going to see the same things over and over again. And perhaps they'll manage to keep that 30 minutes of play that excited him so much in the first half. But if we are being honest and serious, I mean, can we really seeing them coming up across a team that's become so good in the non-possession phase, which Napoli are, and Juventus coming out of this being like, yeah, we found that technical power of play that managed to just zip past all these guys when Ronaldo doesn't seem to be there. Costa, we don't know if he's going to, you know, fall over or not. Dybala, who's clearly not over coronavirus, you know, and all the repercussions that he suffered because of it. So, I'm honestly not very optimistic. I would have been optimistic if it was Allegri.
Nikki, looking at Napoli, I mean, Mina, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were impressed with the way they played against Inter. I think, you know, it was pretty basic, but it got,
I mean,
it's
30%
there.
Possession. How impressed can you be with 30% possession?
Well, I think you can be very impressed with 30% possession. I think, what was it that Inter got against Barcelona at the Camp Nou? You can be very impressed with it. I wasn't especially impressed with Napoli. I thought it was, you know, really? It was a classic sucker punch. It was what they're good at, that sort of counter-attacking football, playing vertically again. It was a very well-taken goal. But frankly, for my money on another day, and this is acknowledging loudly that he's completely at fault on the first goal, but on another day, David Ospina doesn't keep them in that game and they lose. I don't think they won because of any great narrative. I think they won because their keeper saved a bunch of chances. Inter weren't quite as ruthless as they could have been. I will say this, and I think this needs to be sort of restated a few times probably in the days ahead. These two games were played by teams that had less than 3 weeks of actual team training together. They've had some individual training, but actual team training stuff in groups, less than 3 weeks ago. So, of course, you're not expecting to see these teams at their best. And I don't think we did see any of them at anything close to their best. But there were some things to like about Napoli. They did get battered in terms of chances. That's just a fact. The number of chances created by teams is objectively was in Inter's favour. There were things to like about them. I thought the Maximovic-Koulibaly partnership, and I know Mina's on this bandwagon as well, looks, the more you see it, it looks better than the Manolas-Koulibaly partnership.
Can you explain something to me about this, though? Because remember, like, Fabio Capello said this, and we all kind of nodded along, or certainly I did. I said, yeah, it makes sense, and happened with the Bundesliga and the Serie A. A lot of people saying, well, the edge is going to go to people who've got smaller, lighter, more agile players because they're going to get fit quicker and whatever, and you know, and so Insigne, Mertens, I get that. But for Koulibaly to have a game like that, when that dude is the size of, he's a man mountain, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
And he certainly looked sharper. And then, you know, in this season, he hasn't been as great as past seasons, but he looked as sharp as he's ever been. Maximovic, also not a small human being.
Yeah.
And yet they dominated. Is this conventional wisdom? Is this just all a bunch of nonsense that we just make assumptions and stuff because
yeah.
we try to explain things? Okay, all right.
That's a lot of nonsense. I mean, you know, look, Koulibaly has always been, sometimes I think Koulibaly is like part player and part footballing myth, because sometimes like people talk about him and like they'll say his height is something absurd, like 6'9", and like he's not. He's like, he's tall, he's not like that. It was hilarious because in the pre-game lineup, he'd stood next to Politano. And so when it scrolled down, there was a comedic effect for me between the size disparity of them. But he's big. But he's always been, you know, this is why he's such an extraordinary player, you know, much more than Manolas or Maximovic. Koulibaly is genuinely a world-class centre-back. And he that's because he manages to be extremely light on his feet for that size. I mean, he has always been impressively nimble. So maybe that's some part of it. But
so that helps to get fit.
I agree with you.
It's just something that we've heard so many times, especially in Italy, where we have this obsession with fitness. Those players that they call the guys they call diesels, right? Who take longer to get fit. You know, they said, "Oh, Hedira is going to take longer because he's big." And I don't know. It sounds like a good idea, but who the hell knows what these people were doing in lockdown? I think it could even be very random things like. Mertens has a roof terrace, right? So he can go out and he can maybe lift weights and do burpees. But maybe, I don't know, I have no idea. I've never been to Koulibaly's house, but maybe the guy's got a giant garden and he's been doing wind sprints. I mean, this kind of crap makes a difference, right?
We know that they're best friends. Like, they're very close. So maybe Mertens has been telling him how he trains and now he's just doing exactly the same thing. But this is kind of a part of the reason why I know, okay, so Nicky's not that impressed. You're saying it's very simple football. And it is. I'm not sitting here telling you
they took
a worldwide storm. Yeah. But what I think is so impressive about Napoli is just imagine the narrative if Conte had walked into the side and, you know, all of a sudden you see like Koulibaly back to the back, to the way he was, Maximovic playing at a much higher level, you know, worthy of sort of the initial feelings we used to have about him before, that he is a good defender, and then you're like, oh, now they've overpaid for this man, you know? And then you look at sort of, you know, Insigne and how devoted he is to that. And by the way, even when I was looking back at like highlights, because I was watching Juventus-Napoli, how he was just tussling with Douglas Costa as well back then, trying to get the ball. This is an inspired team in many ways, and it went through a lot this side. And it's a team that has always created beautiful play, but never really that efficient up front. And it would drive me insane, which is why I kept saying to you, I think they need Mauro Icardi, or they need a striker. What they are under Gattuso is perhaps less beautiful, but so good in the non-possession phase, so good in actually trying to make the most of any chances they do have, you know. And there seems to be this harmony at the moment. You know, you feel like Koulibaly feels safe. So he's not having to control every situation where he's turning around all the time. Like I felt like he was before with Manolas next to him. I feel now he's like, okay, I know that he can handle this. So I can just concentrate on what I do best, because I am a world-class centre-back. And I've got Demme in front of me, who's doing a terrific job. Dries Mertens, who seemed to be so happy being where he is all the time, you know, the beloved Chiro. And I just think that is really Gattuso's greatest sort of what he's brought to this team that's made the difference. So, yeah, they're not exciting, absolutely. But you know what? Inter had this game in their hand, and they threw it their way. So sometimes it's not always being the best team. It's knowing how to read the situations and making the most of your chances. And that's why I was so impressed by it.
I have a big qualifier to what I said, just because like I don't want it to be completely misrepresented. I do think that something you just talked about there, Koulibaly looking more sort of confident in where he is. There's no question that Gattuso has simplified things. And there were times when on this podcast, certainly I think all of us praised Ancelotti's fluidity of his system. And, you know, the cost of having a fluid system is you're asking your players to think much more. And I think that in this system, Gattuso is asking them to think less. And sometimes that certainly can help a player. I do think, you know, to qualify everything I said, I find it quite plausible that Napoli can win this final. I think that playing exactly the way they did against Inter can work, because what we saw from over two legs, actually, not just this most recent one from Juventus, is that they can get bogged down. They can get very sort of stuck in a mode where they've got a lot of the ball and don't know what to do with it.
Yes.
And what Napoli have in that situation is the ability to quick strike, to get that goal like they did with Mertens. So actually, In terms of where he's got them to win potentially a cup, I'm not faulting Gattuso. I'm not trying to disparage
take
what
away
he's
from
doing.
Him.
Yeah, it's just that I think that it's not. No wheels have been reinvented.
I just look at it and I thought Inter were a much better team over the two legs, and I think Ospina made world class saves, and we wouldn't be having this conversation. But I want to ask before we ask about something, because for me, in terms of ability, arguably Napoli's best player, Koulibaly aside, is Fabian Ruiz, and we saw him come on. I'm just wondering, for me, this game against Juve especially is made for Fabian Ruiz, just to give Napoli something different. He can obviously handle the defensive physical side of the game. I don't know if he didn't start because he wasn't fully fit. But would it be wise for... I know Gattuso is superstitious, but it'd be wise to find a place for him in the starting 11, right? I mean, he'd be mad not to.
I think he has to. It depends on the team that he... Gattuso is the type of man who will adjust things depending to what he thinks is more important, the possession phase or the non-possession phase. I think that the team just doesn't move as well or has any really interesting chances going forward, goal-scoring opportunities without Fabian Ruiz. I think it's his distribution, his intelligence, his reading of the lines is just so much better than what they currently have at the moment. So it's important. It just depends on what kind of game he's going to play against Juventus. And it's, you know, I think that's entirely dependent on, I think he's going to focus on the non-possession phase. So it's going to be a defensive. I'm looking for 30% of the ball. I'm looking to cut anything away that I can or minimize the space for Ronaldo and co. And, you know, that might mean having to sacrifice Fabian Ruiz. And if they find themselves needing a goal, that's when you introduce the Spaniard. But for me, there would never be a Napoli without Ruiz, right? But it is also, Gattuso, what I like about him so much and what other people hate is he's a pragmatist, you know? He's not really interested in trying to woo you or make this a beautiful side. He's interested in getting the goals. And I'm not or rather getting the win. So it's interesting to see, but he has to start. Just don't think he will.
I don't know what his fitness was like against Inter. Maybe that's why he didn't start. Maybe it was the fact that, lest we forget, there was a first leg to this game. Napoli are at home. They're 1-0 up. They know Inter have to attack them. Maybe you put in, you know, a little bit, another defensive midfielder, and you look to hit on the break, and that's the right interpretation. But this game against Juve starts at 0-0, and I think it would be madness if Fabian Ruiz is fit for him not to start. Shall we wrap this with some predictions?
Yes.
I think I know.
You go first.
Are you going to make me go first?
Because you hate them so much.
I don't think either one of these teams played well. And yet, weirdly, they're both in the final. So I'm going to lean Juve just because you're usually proven right. I'll go with a narrow Juve win here.
Nikki?
You said Napoli before. You hinted. You can't go back on this.
Gab's logic is totally sound, but I'm just going to pick Napoli.
Thank you.
I'll pick it because, hey, Dries Mertens just became Napoli's all-time top scorer. So another Mertens goal to decide a game between two teams.
And you got a lovely message from Diego Armando Maradona as well to congratulate him.
And Hamzik's agent. It's interesting because I don't go by teams. I go by coaches, and I actually believe more in Gattuso getting a result than Sarri right now. So I think it's Napoli as well. Okay, let's talk about Inter. They have Sampdoria coming up to play. This is the game that they didn't manage to play before lockdown started. And obviously, we know that they were the better side against Napoli. I think all three of us are in agreement that they had the better game. I think there were some interesting things to take away from that, perhaps mostly about Lautaro Martinez and his performance in general in that game. What do you guys think about? I mean, do you think that they can seriously challenge for the title? And how must Conte be feeling now that he felt that he played, you know, a really good game and ended up losing to Gattuso's Napoli?
Well, we know how he feels because he told us. He says he's happy. I wasn't happy about losing, but he says there's nothing he could say about the performance. And I think broadly speaking, he's right. Inter created much better chances. That said, you know, we have an expression in Italy about, you know, a guy wearing salami over his eyes. You can't ignore, as you point out, Mina, that Lautaro was really, really poor in this game. Lukaku wasn't great either, but in some ways I think it's also the way Conte plays with those two, everything is so coordinated that when one person isn't quite making the right runs, the other guy suffers as well. The easy conclusion to jump to is that, oh, Lautaro's, you know, he's got Barcelona on his mind and that's why he's playing badly. I don't really buy that explanation at all. Now, obviously, I think it's just more he's 23 years old and he's coming out of lockdown 3 months ago. It's in Lautaro's interest to play well because he still, even if he wants to go to Barcelona, he still needs to negotiate a contract with them. And also, since we know that Barcelona have all sorts of financial issues and they'll probably have to come up with some kind of package of players plus cash, you know, how much he impresses, I think, between now and the end of the season will also determine how much Barcelona are willing to stump up with him, because we know what the number is, and Inter say they're not going to diverge from that number. It's 110 million, but obviously if you've got players in there, the value of the players is subjective. So would Barcelona be willing to part with better guys because they think Lautaro's going to make them so much better? I don't know. I like to think the dude just had a bad game because it was a long time after lockdown, and hopefully he's, you know, he's not. It's not because Barcelona are in his head.
Well, that's interesting, Nikki. Do you feel that this is just a one-off bad game when you look at the fact that he wasn't that great against Juventus before lockdown? He wasn't that great in the Coppa Italia in the first leg. You know, is this just a product of his age that he's not going to be the most consistent and actually has nothing to do with Barcelona? It's just that you're in and out of games when you're a little bit young and trying to prove yourself? Or is there more to this?
I think I said it before. I'm definitely going to say it now. Like, I'm not making sweeping judgments off one game. I'm just not on individual players. I think you've got to give time and see how things are looking in a few weeks. Obviously, it's going to be talked about. And I think one thing that does sometimes get underestimated with things like this is how they can almost become self-fulfilling prophecies. If you keep the media focused constantly on this one player and how he's not living up to expectations, the scrutiny becomes more intense, and then the pressure to do something becomes more intense, and that does affect players sometimes. Different players differently, but it certainly affects some. I think I'm sort of more interested out of this game in the first proper iteration, I guess, of the Christian Eriksen Inter. I mean, that's sort of what we've been waiting for. It's the idea that Conte has finally had some time to integrate Eriksen, had an amazing start, of course, scoring straight from a corner, all the more amazing because I think if you ask any Tottenham fan about Christian Eriksen in corners, the first thing they'd say is he won't get it past the first man. So it was certainly a way to introduce himself. What do you guys think? I mean, were you impressed by Eriksen in this game? Do you think it is going to be the model for Inter from here forward? I don't know. What did you think?
Well, I thought it was interesting that, you know, Conte changed his formation to accommodate Eriksen. He played 3-4-1-2. He played him in the hole. He had a lot of latitude. And, you know, there were times when he came back and then sort of, you know, was deeper than Brozovic to pick up the goal. So he clearly gave Eriksen license in this game. I still think the best version of Eriksen, and we've seen Pochettino do this, is a lot more complex and sophisticated than just simply sticking him in the hole. But you're always going to have this duality at Inter, right, where everything is so schematic. The runs, you know, the little balls around the corner and whatever to Lautaro and Lukaku, are everything is so regimented, so schematic, that having a guy freestyling in there, I'm not saying it's going to create a problem, but you're going to have to find a balance. If you get the balance right, it's great because you've got both the regimented schemes and you've got the creativity and quality and improvisation that Eriksen brings. If you don't get the balance right, you will stutter and your supply to the front men isn't going to be what it was supposed to be. But I thought it was encouraging. I thought Eriksen played really well. I'm certainly not going to criticize them for the goal that they give up. You know, some people went there, which they shouldn't have. And, you know, he looks confident and happy, and I think he can play a big part between now and the end of the season.
It's interesting because I thought that, I mean, I love that he changed his formation to suit him. I love that, for me, Eriksen looked so desperate to make a difference and really geared up for this game. And I don't know, he just looked super motivated. I thought there were a lot of players, actually, that I thought were very good. I know that Lukaku and Lautaro weren't players that I was especially impressed with, but I thought Ashley Young did a very good job. I think Nino Maravilla, Alexis Sanchez came on and just had all this energy to prove himself, created all these types of chances. And I was like, well, you know, this is another one that we have to think about coming off the bench and maybe making a difference. So I thought Inter overall, I mean, when you look at the last match that they played against Sampdoria, it was a very different Sampdoria, obviously, and they were a very different Inter as well. It was the beginning. But it was almost their creativity that made the difference in that match. You know, it was Sensi and Brozovic. And I just want to know whether we're going to ever see sort of like more of this. Are we going to see all three of them together with Eriksen and Sensi and Brozovic and perhaps not so much physicality or just Barella?
I think Barella always plays, I mean, in Conte's world, right? I mean, Conte sees a little bit of himself in Barella as well.
But can Sensi also join in?
I think Sensi's going to be the alternative to Eriksen. In some situations, you can think about Sensi being the alternative to Brozovic or Sensi and Eriksen, you know, taking turns to do what Brozovic does. But I don't think he's going to deviate from that. From that three-man midfield, whether it's 2+1 or whether it's just a straight central three. What I'm curious about is, you hinted at it before, I mean, I'm curious to know if you really believe this, or if you're just kind of saying this to, you know, stave off the bad luck, as we say in Italy. It's 6 points if they beat Sampdoria, the gap. Which you could actually sum those 6 points up in the two defeats against Juventus.
Oh my God, it's what everyone keeps saying, and it's just not the same, but anyway.
Yeah, I don't buy this at all. And also, you can't just pretend the defeats against Juventus didn't happen, because they also show that, you know, Juventus beat them twice. But can we put a percent chance on Inter turning this into a three-way title race?
I mean, you never just look at Antonio Conte and think he's not going to make it. You always believe in Antonio Conte. I'm not a fan of the quality of football he always provides us with, but he's always somebody who's a threat and he's a competitor and he's excellent at motivating people. And we've seen that already. But I think when people are coming out being like, well, if you look about it, there are only 6 points if they defeat, you know, Sampdoria, they're actually not that far off Juve. Firstly, this isn't Allegri's Juve. This is Sarri's Juve. And secondly, let's just take a moment to be like, this is a different side to what Spalletti's created. So this isn't all on Antonio Conte. This is a lot to do with Pepe Marotta and how much investment that they have made on this side. They barely had Icardi and Nangola last season. There were all types of arguments. Perisic was unhappy. This is a team. So obviously they're going to be doing better. And of course they have a chance to do something special, because they all motivated and they would love to do something. You can see just Victor Moses coming on and all his motivations. I definitely think they can make it a three-way race. But it's about, and I say this, how they're going to cope in this type of situation. Is it going to be the way that they're going to really relish this and then just keep performing and performing and performing? A little bit like Wolves in the Premier League, you know, in congested fixtures where you think they might just fall apart because it's so much and they're not such a huge squad, whether or not they'll keep performing. And I think that Inter has two ways. Either they'll fall apart because they're exhausted from how much ground that they're covering, or they'll find a way to go through it because they'll treat it as a mini tournament and want to prove themselves from a mental point of view. But you'll need Lautaro Martinez and Lukaku to do a little bit better. I wonder how it's all going to work out with Eriksen. I don't know, when you look at it as well, I mean, think about all the games that they've had, 21 points, you know, that they could have won against the top five, and they've only managed 8. So that's 7 games that they've only won 3 of against big opposition, against better opposition. This worries me going forward. It shows you the kind of quality. Yes, they had the game in their hand against Napoli and threw it away. They lost to Lazio. They lost to Juventus. Sometimes when they need to raise their head, even when the game's in their hand, sometimes like against Barcelona or Dortmund, they lose it, and that worries me.
All right, so percentage chance they're going to win the title?
20%.
Nikki?
I'm nowhere near that on them. I think maybe a 10 at a push, more like 5 even. Give it 8. I think for me to take them seriously, they have to beat Sampdoria. I think perhaps not playing in the Coppa final might even benefit them on that front. You know, you've got the week now to be ready for it. And I think the one thing that really has bothered me from Inter after this week is just Conte immediately back to the same old conversation of what we need is more experience in the side. What we need is more older players. Yeah, already bored of that conversation starting again. Not looking forward to the next 6 weeks of that.
Well, you know, Candreva had his good game of the year, so wonderful to see him again. But, I'm with Nicky. It's not just the 6 points, because, you know, maybe Juve can collapse. But there's also Lazio in the mix as well. So I personally don't see that happen at all. But we mentioned Lazio. We're not going to talk about them much because they won't have played again until after next show. Although I do want to say it's kind of weird that Juve will have played 3 times before Lazio actually step on the pitch. I just want to get a sense from you guys. Is this a thing? Will it favor Juve weirdly in some ways, or does it actually favor Lazio because they have more time to train?
Well, we definitely would have heard about it if it was the other way around. You know, I'm sure Lazio would have mentioned it, you know, like they did about how many times, you know, Juventus let their players travel in quarantine and they didn't let any of them.
I'm sure Lotito will mention it if things go south for Lazio. I think we can take that. We can take that as a given. Across town at Roma, on the other hand, it's a bit of a mess. Now, the club, as it looks now, obviously, they're looking at different owners. This business with Friedkin's not going to happen. And it looks like Gianluca Petracchi is done. There were hints at this even before. Why is this all coming out now? Has the quarantine driven people mad, Mina?
This is an interesting situation because I know that Roma's divided over how they feel about their president and this American ownership, but it does seem a little bit strange that, you know, since 2011, we've just had a rotating cast at direct level and they never seem to stick, you know. It was Monchi, it didn't stick, you know, Petracchi now, it's not sticking. He has too many different consultants that come in and I can understand why some people are angry at Palotta. But then I listen to his interviews that he gives, like the one that he gave to the Roma website, and I just thought, he speaks so well that I end up believing everything that he's saying and thinking that he's actually a wonderful owner. And that, you know, he just didn't get the right offer, the offer that he wanted or that would satisfy Roma's interests, despite the fact that they are in debt and they're having problems. And so he's just going to try to find another solution, even if that upsets other people, and even if Petracchi has to be another one who leaves. But it's funny with Roma, you know, I guess what's the most important thing, you know, when you consider how many also of their players are angry with management, there's also so many players that just continue to do well for them, you know, like Pellegrini saying, oh, no, I'm staying here. I don't care if there's a release clause. Paolo Fonseca describing this as the project of a lifetime, and he just wants to stay here forever, and he absolutely loves the stage and loves the desperation of the fans to win something. And so you end up believing in Roma, but it's a bad situation, and I think it's amazing if they manage to, you know, continuing winning games, but they do have a nice team, and I know they haven't won anything. Lazio have done better, but there's just this belief about them that makes them such an interesting side to watch, and I'm want them to win something.
Nikki, would this all have been different if there wasn't so many artifacts in the whole stadium business? Based on the original plan, they should have been inside the new stadium playing in the new stadium now, behind closed doors, obviously. But I can't step away from the fact that the Roma owners, maybe they underestimated the stadium issue, or whether they're just victims of the diabolical bureaucracy and interests surrounding, you know, trying to build anything in Rome.
I have a lot of time for Jim Palotta. I think he's an owner who, I mean, obviously it's not like he owns it privately on its own. It is a group, but he is the front of the group who owns the club. I find him very compelling as someone who is trying to innovate, someone who is trying to do new things, someone who is constantly actually interested in wanting to achieve better for his club. I think he's made missteps. I think he's made several missteps in terms of the directorial appointments. I think that the club's transfer policy has been, unfortunately, we've talked about it before, at times chaotic for me. I've criticized it on the show before. But I think that the driving sort of underpinning ethos of what he's trying to do to get into that new stadium, to rejuvenate the squad and have a core of young players, I think those are good ideas for a club with the resources and the position that Roma has. I think that certainly there has been some underestimation of what it was going to take to get that stadium done. And I think part of that, perhaps, you can criticise for, because maybe people coming into that situation, coming into Rome specifically and not understanding the way things work, could have underestimated something. But I also think he's been hamstrung, the club has been hamstrung by a series of political changes in the city that haven't favoured them, that have made life harder. So it's a really, really complicated picture to analyse, you know, how much you criticise for that stadium. It certainly is become the albatross. It's become the thing around the club's neck that is stopping it from progressing. If they were in that stadium, I think we'd be looking on them very differently. My personal feeling is that right now they have a great manager. I really do believe in Fonseca, and they have some really, really interesting young players, but they still have, again, in my opinion, an imbalanced squad. I think you take Edin Dzeko out of it, you have some problems pretty fast. But I don't personally see Pelota as the big problem in that equation. I do understand why, after this number of years not getting that stadium off the ground, he might have wanted out.
Can I ask you, Gam, just, you mentioned the bureaucracy. Do you think, what are your feelings about Jim Pelota? Do you think he's just getting so frustrated and is not really able to provide what he can? And is this going to be a problem that Rocco Camusso has as well at Fiorentina?
No, I think those are very different situations. I just think there's a level. I mean, Rome, it's Rome. I mean, and Nikki touched upon it. It's very difficult to do things. You know, it's easy to say, oh, look, man from the outside goes in and doesn't quite understand how diabolical it is. But in fact, he obviously had a lot of local people with a lot of local experience helping him. And I think the election, some of the political stuff, changes in power, a lot of these things really messed him up along the way. I think Rocco's in a very different situation in Florence. There's a much better, despite some of the bluster, there's a much better understanding with the city in terms of getting a new stadium. There's more space in which to do it. And I think the climate has changed a little bit. And also, Rome, Florence isn't a divided city with another team there and another interest, which, you know, seem to cut across political lines. And that seems to be what really matters to people making decisions. But speaking of stadiums, obviously,
I think that's a really important point. Sorry to interrupt. I think it's a really important point people don't necessarily get, is that genuinely political decisions are influenced by people in power having fan affiliations in Rome. I mean, I think that has absolutely happened in Rome plenty of times.
But people don't get this. There's a Juventus club for MPs, and the same people from the far right and the far left who are physically coming to blows in Parliament. When the session ends, they all get together and they all put on their black and white scarves and they all go and cheer on Juve and they all become best of friends again, which I find mind-blowing, but hey, you know, that's fandom for you. Milan also ambitious, all trying to build a new stadium. They're going to do it together with Inter. We'll see where that goes. It's almost like a metaphor for the many rebuilds. We've talked Rangnick before. I think you're going to see reports in the coming days that this is the week in which Red Bull have asked Rangnick to make a decision. I don't think the situation is going to be resolved until later. I don't know that we can draw too many conclusions from the Juve game because, you know, Rebic got himself idiotically sent off after less than 20 minutes. Hernandez is back. Ibrahimovic is supposedly doing everything to come back as well. Can they salvage something? Did you see something in the way they played that might give you hopes for them to finish in the Europa League spots?
To me, like, in better and worse, this performance was actually very similar to what we saw from Milan in the first leg against Juventus. And actually, defensively, it was quite effective. Over two legs, they really only gave up one penalty to Juventus and very few other chances. But the problem is, and we talked about it on the podcast last week, without Ibrahimovic, I do not understand the attacking identity of this team at all. Like, at all. With Ibrahimovic, it wasn't, in my mind, a great attacking identity. It was basically, we can ping the ball along and hope that he can hold it up, bring people into play, which he did pretty effectively, certainly more effectively than I thought he would when they signed him. Without him, you know, it was Rebic up front, and for the few minutes that Rebic stayed on the pitch. So yeah, all right, we can see that again with him not getting sent off immediately. But I don't get it. Like, I don't see the system. The system is just hope that he can be quick sometimes and break away. You have a very stodgy midfield. Again, you know, to sort of echo a little bit of what we said with Napoli, defensively well organised. There's some things I like about them at the back. I mean, I still think Romagnoli is developing very nicely as a defender. Donnarumma is a good goalkeeper, but it's very uninspiring, and it doesn't feel like a team with an identity that's going anywhere, which is why I can't see him lasting beyond the season anyway. I don't know. I don't feel excited about any of it.
I think that when it comes to Milan, the one word that I would use to describe them is confusion. I think there's confusion at boardroom level over where their future lies or the direction they all want to take, because it seems that everyone has a different way they want to go. And I think that's trickled down as well onto the pitch sometimes in the way they play almost. You know, you've got like Ibrahimovic and all these reports of him being a little bit upset with the directors because he wants Milan to always be ambitious. Because obviously that just reflects his own character. He's a man who's won a lot and he wants this Milan side to continue doing so. Gazidis wants to start from scratch. And I just feel like every year we have, you know, more conversations about who's going to come in, who's going to get Milan to start again, and, you know, what identity are they going to have and where's it going to go? And it's almost like I'm a little bit bored of the subject, but I watched them play against Juventus and I didn't think they were bad. They were down to 10 men. You know, Rebic, we all know what he did, but I thought that exactly that. Defensively, they were good, you know, pragmatic when they needed to be, but there's nothing about this Milan side that makes me think like, oh, they should definitely be in the top six, because I just think that the teams that are ahead of them deserve to be where they are and almost kind of almost want them to keep that position.
Yeah, I mean, I think they need to step back. You'd need something to happen, something to break out, whether it's Rafael Leao, whether it's the big kid Colombo who came on at the end, whether it's Daniel Maldini. I mean, I think at some point, I think the Ibra dependency, you know, that's what they need to sort out. But I think the guy's talked way too much. He's not going to be here in a couple months. And they should start looking ahead to next season as soon as they realize they're not going to qualify for the Europa League. So I think in some ways it's going to be dependent on how the other teams do, how long Milan stay in this theoretical Europa League race. But for me, I'd almost...
How does Paqueta play without a hair clip? I just feel like his hair's all over his eyes.
I, at some point, and this is, I think, where the media have been derelict, all these people, Paqueta, Çalhanoğlu, the ridiculous contract Donnarumma signed, Lucas Biglia. Honestly, at some point, what were you thinking? Why do you think you need to go and spend all this money, all this fassone, all this garbage that happened before, and people who should know better defending the Chinese project and fassone? I mean, whatever. Let's not reopen that can of worms. Let's talk about happiness, because when I spoke to Fonseca, who I know you like, Mina, he talked about how his two of his favorite managers in Serie A, two of his favorite teams to watch, were Gasperini, no surprise there, and my boy De Zerbi, and they're playing each other. Atalanta against Sassuolo. It's just guaranteed excitement, right?
I mean, how was he when you spoke to him? Is he having a good time? Is he happy?
He's in lockdown. There's a global pandemic which is killing tens of thousands of people. So he wasn't exactly doing cartwheels. But I mean, I'm curious to see. I actually think Sassuolo are probably better placed than Atalanta because of the way they play, to have dealt with the break. But I wonder if maybe De Zerbi isn't going to go and trip somebody up.
Well, maybe De Zerbi will have what Lautaro Martinez will have, which is all this talk about where his future will be, and maybe it's gone to his head, and maybe now he just absolutely doesn't know how to function on the field, which is just me just talking nonsense, really. I think it's going to be such an interesting match, but no way am I going to take anything away from Atalanta and believe in another team when it comes to them. Atalanta's Atalanta, and more than anything, forget what they can do on the pitch, what they have in their heads, what they have in terms of mental fortitude, in, you know, like what they've seen, what they've witnessed because of this pandemic. There's going to be this desire on their behalf to prove themselves, And I think that for me, like, I really strongly believe in that side of things. And I'd love to see them do a good show. I do love Sassuolo, but I think right now at the moment, Atalanta need sort of support, because I want to see them continue to grow. I want them to do excellently when it comes to the Champions League, and they have a great chance. And when you look at those players and you look at the harmony they have on the team and you know, the beauty of their game, how can anyone really think that anyone else would win over them? But I know, Nikki, you're even a bigger fan than I am.
Yeah, I mean, what I think about Atalanta is well on record. Who knows how this game will go, because I think that, you know, I keep saying it, we don't know anything about how these teams are going to come out of lockdown yet. And we'll find out. One sort of sub note to this, these teams, Jeremy Boga has been one of the sort of big revelations for Sassuolo, not going back to Chelsea, which I think a lot of people weren't sure about. So that's a positive note, potentially for Sassuolo.
Who's going to Juve then?
maybe. We'll see.
Maybe Napoli.
Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of went over. Yeah. Okay.
So, any other business, I guess, we're up to now, aren't we?
Well, yeah. There it is.
Any other business?
At least Sal has a new sporting director. So perhaps they can deal with all their contract issues and trying to build for next season. That's my one addition to everything that you guys have to say. Any interesting news?
Mario Balotelli, who, of course, has been... We already knew last week that Brescia was seeking a just cause to release him from his contract. Well, he came back to training for a few days and then disappeared with Summercake again this weekend. Ciro Immobile, front page of Gazette today, allegedly off to new Newcastle and new Newcastle owners for €55 million. Anyone buying that?
Yeah, no. Not considering how. No. But I do, I have a question, guys. There were all these reports on Friday, and I, you know, obviously my Italian is not like yours, where it was reported that the quarantine period is 14 days, right? Then it was now down to 7, and that it's been agreed that it is going to be 7, and only the player who has COVID or who's tested positive will now be isolated, not the whole team. So that would change a lot for Serie A. Is this true? Because I haven't seen it ratified by members of the government or anything like that. It was just a report that came out across La Repubblica and a bunch of others that talked about the fact that the rules have changed. So can someone offer me a better explanation?
So as I understand it, the sort of the deputy health minister came out and said that the CTS was going to go, which is the technical and scientific committee, was going to go and review the situation, because obviously quarantining an entire team with 2 weeks would make it difficult to, or make it basically impossible to finish the season. There's an agreement in principle. I think what they're going to do anyway is they, obviously the number of new cases in Italy just keeps dwindling and dwindling. I think it's a couple hundred a day of new infections at this stage. So they're kind of hoping this problem goes away on its own, because nobody will test positive. And of course, nobody has tested positive since the testing regimen was introduced. So the idea, I think they hope that they'll get government approval to do this. And I think what it's going to be is it's still going to be a group quarantine, but they're going to be allowed to play, and they'll basically just test people almost on a daily basis to monitor them, and so they'll be able to continue training and whatnot.
Do you know when this will happen for sure, then we can just sort of rest easy knowing that Serie A will continue, because living in this massive fear that I'm living in at the moment just worries me a tad?
I don't know when it's going to happen for sure, but I think having gone so far, I don't think at this point there's any appetite either from the government or from the clubs to do anything to stop Serie A from finishing. It would have to be a major outbreak rather than just one player testing positive. So I think they're going to give more discretion to the regional health authorities as well, which is what they do in Germany. And I think they're pretty confident that they'll get through it, simply because the infection rate in Italy now is just so low. It's statistically highly improbable, unless somebody goes around, you know, licking doorknobs, that anybody's going to come down with COVID.
Well, that's a rainbow on my day. So stuff to look forward to is, of course, the Coppa Italia final. Zlatan Ibrahimovic should also be back on the 28th of June for Milan against Roma. So many things to look forward to. Obviously, Serie A kicks off this weekend, so tune in. And we'll be back next Tuesday for the Serie A Awesome podcast to talk about all the action and preview even more action. Yay, football is back. Thank you from us.